Blog Talk Radio.
As the tears are falling from my face, with all my fears I long for your embrace. How am I gonna carry on and be the one you leave? The tears are
And welcome to another edition of Continue Mission. I'm your host, James McCormick, and we got Rich Kilblain, and we're going to be having some kind of an open mic night tonight. But I want to read something to you that just came through, and it involves Senator Joe Manchin. It says, Democrats vent fury as Joe Manchin shelves action on climate change. Joe Manchin is the chair, by the way, of the Senate Energy Committee. And basically, some of the comments came from Democrats are sounding dire warnings after Joe Manchin tanked their hopes of action on climate change. We're all going to die, House Budget Committee Chairman John Yarmuth of Kentucky said. That's what he told reporters when asked about the consequences of Congress failing to act. Yarmuth's remarks on Friday captured the cocktail of anger, frustration, resentment, and powerlessness that many Democrats felt under Manchin, the Democrat from West Virginia. He took a one-man wrecking ball to what's left of the President Joe Biden's agenda, dealing a heavy blow to their big policy ambition. You know, I wish Joe Manchin could do something about Hunter Biden. You know, swing that wrecking ball over there and figure out why we're sending our fuel over to China. That's another topic. It says, it doesn't matter what I advise. One said, the Senate's the Senate. It doesn't matter what any of us do. Apparently, it doesn't matter what the administration done. We've got one person who's trying policy for the entire country, and that's a shame. Unfortunately, we have one Democrat who thinks he knows better than any other Democrat. You know, I'm going to say he probably does, because the Democrat Party today is a disaster. They don't even know what bathroom to go in, folks. I'm just going to tell you, that's just where we're at with what's going on in the country today. They stomp on the flag. They burn the flag. They think it's okay to burn down cities and carry on and act like a bunch of jackasses. That is an appropriate symbol for them right now. Of course, on the other side, you've got the elephant flopping around too. It ain't doing too much better. I am an independent, but when I read this and I see this party nonsense. And here's Senator Martin Heinrich, the Democrat from New Mexico, openly questioned if Manchin should keep his gavel as chairman of the Senate Energy Committee. Schumer can take it away from him, you know, give it to anybody else, some lunatic, some loon out there. Or maybe Chuck Schumer and those guys realize that a lot of this craziness just might not be all that good for America. And they're letting Joe Manchin fall on the sword to fix it. Says, we have an opportunity to address the climate crisis right now. You know, if you're truly concerned about the climate crisis, then why in the hell are you mining coal like it's nobody's business? I mean, we are like overtime, mining coal, mining coal, mining coal, putting it on ships, shipping it over to China, burning the hell out of it. Do you think that it matters if it's burnt here or burnt there? It has nothing to do with climate change. It has everything to do with trying to force feed. Who? Hey, Rich, I got to go, man. You got this. I'll be right back.
Okay. All right. When are you coming back? Oh, all right. Well, I guess I've got the show. That'll change the direction in which we were going to talk, the topic we were going to talk about before. Well, since he brought up the issue of climate change, Here's my position on it, and it just so happens that besides being a professional historian, I'm also a amateur paleontologist, or was an amateur paleontologist. I loved studying fossils. You know, where everybody else was more interested in the dinosaurs, in my case, I actually prefer the Carboniferous period. And where I lived in Oklahoma was really right before the mass extinction of the Permian age. In fact, I could walk out and show you the layer, like, okay, here's everything from here down is alive, and from here up, everything's dead. There's no fossil evidence left after this. And for a long time, the question was, like, what caught it? Was the largest extinction, bigger than the K2 extinction that killed the dinosaurs, because a lot of animals survived. But in the mass extinction of the Permian period, I think something like 90% of life was extinguished. And keep in mind, most of that life was in the ocean. And it turns out it was this huge volcanism in Russia. You know, that whole thing just erupted, massive volcanoes, and it just, you know, blanketed the earth and just blocked out the sun. The earth cooled, so very little, you know, everything's dependent on sunlight, you know, for plants and, you know, to produce, you know, just survive. Okay. And so that was a big extinction. There's been others. And in fact, what you find, and you know, there was like a 4-foot layer of limestone. There was these inside it, you know, I would find like these 4-inch layers, were some 4 to 6 inches. And there were several of them that was very fossiliferous. And I could tell because that the water levels were changing, sea levels were changing, because there's certain, and I mean, most of these lived in the tidal zone, and some animals prefer, like we could compare it with today, prefer being totally, totally underwater, can't survive any exposed time. And then within the tidal zone, because I lived in Monterey, and I enjoyed, you know, walking out there in the tidal areas, and we would find that, you know, there's the high tide area, which is exposed air most. That's mostly where your algaes are, green algae, blue green algae, stuff like that. And then you get into, and there's your little tide pools, and then you work your way to middle tide zone and lower tide zone. Lower tide zone is only exposed to the air or less time. And the fauna and changes from there. And I could see it in these layers of rocks. And I'm realizing the sea level's changing. And every time it receded, it killed off certain, in this case, it was brachiopods. You know, every layer where the water level receded, then when it came back, there's more fossils missing. And so that is where I was exposed that the Earth climate had been changing for years. I mean, for millions of years, okay? So then we start coming into more like the present era. And they discovered a body up in the Italian Alps, and it's near a place called Ozzy. And so it turns out, I mean, you know, when they found the body, the ice was receding. The glaciers are melting. The glaciers are melting. That's a fact. Okay. Well, it uncovered this body. And they went up and they found out, because, of course, there's a police investigation, but this body has been perfectly preserved, mummified, though. And it's the Ozzy man. And I encourage any of you to look it up. Very interesting story, because he was murdered, okay, but it preserved that ice, you know, preserved everything he had, and it gives us a really good idea of, you know, what the lifestyle was like, how they dressed. Not only that, but they were able to study the contents. They know what his last meals were, and because of what he ate, they literally could trace his route, you know, for the last, you know, 48 or 24 hours to the place where he died. And the, it looks like he may have been on a raid to a another village. And then he was, they chased him down and killed him. So, but here's the issue. He died and was buried in snow 5,000 years ago. 5,000 years ago. What that means is that 5,000 years ago, the temperature, the Earth temperature, is about where it is. Whereas now it's getting warmer because the snows fell and became glaciers and froze him. Right. So and today that same glacier is melting back. So what that tells us is the Earth isn't we're not going to die. We're not going to die. The Earth is going to get warmer. All right. And it's going to get as warm as it was when Otzi lived and his predecessors lived. Now, the hold on a second. Good. Yeah, little emergency. So he's texting me, and he should be back. So now, the big debate, all right, among the people who are what I would call the school of the Church of Global Warming with Al Gore as the head priest and Greta as the priestess, they believe that that global warming is a product of man. Okay, because here's the facts. We know that CO2, an increase in CO2, is tied to an increase in temperature. Now, here's the issue. Now, you know, they'll say, and, this, you know, most scientists believe this, but not all science do, and that is that increase in CO2 causes basically creates a greenhouse gas and traps in solar energy and heats up the Earth. Okay, so an increase in CO2 causes an increase in temperature. Never heard of any scientist being able to replicate an experiment like that and show that increasing CO2 is going to increase the temperature. All right. But we do know there's a relationship. However, and I've mentioned this in the show before, that they have pulled out these ice core samples from Antarctica that can trace the CO2 levels and temperature changes for the last 400,000 years. Okay. And what it reveals, if you go in, is that temperature rises before the CO2 levels increase. In other words, there is a lag between temperature and CO2. And that evidence indicates that that it's the temperature increase that causes the rise in CO2. And so it's the opposite of what, you know, all the global warming, you know, the climate change activists are advocating. And in fact, if you go online and you look this up, you will see a chart that traces, here is the over 400 years, here is the mean temperature, okay? And here's, you know, the increase and decrease of temperature and matched with the increase and decrease in CO2 levels. What you will find is that there are four nearly identical 100,000-year cycles In other words, yes, it is a historical fact that the temperatures are rising. You know, as a historian reading about Indian war battles, I mean, when Custer rode into the Ouachita, and I think it was the 17th or 19th of December, and this is in eastern Oklahoma, western Oklahoma, it was a blizzard. It was a blizzard. We never had snow when I was growing up in Oklahoma before Christmas, let alone blizzards. And growing up, I think we were lucky to have three good snows. Whereas now, we're lucky to even have one good snow. We had ice storms all the time, but not a good snow. But when you read about the life on the Great Plains during the late 19th century, there were severe blizzards. You know, the weather was, you know, it was definitely a lot colder. Even when we think about the American Revolution with, you know, Washington crossing the Delaware to attack at Trenton, they had an ice floe. They were pushing ice out of the way. The Delaware does not freeze over like that now. So yeah, there is historical evidence that the Earth is actually getting warmer. In fact, if you like to ski, I have found just living here in Virginia, the skiing season at the nearest ski resort gets shorter every year. So any politician trying to deny that is just setting himself up for criticism. But the question is this cyclic or is it caused by man? And the ice core samples from Antarctica essentially says this is cyclic. With that, we can see, you know, when you look at that chart, actually, we're not at the peak. Now, it's leveled out for some reason. You know, we're at the end of that 400 or that 100,000-year cycle, so we should be peaking, but it hasn't peaked. In fact, it's really kind of leveled out, and you can see about the time of Aussie, it was leveling out. So you can bet on there. So the Earth is supposed to get warmer. Okay. So how does and that's science. That's science. In fact, also NASA has done a, before I saw these the study on the core samples and the lag time between CO2 increases and temperature increases, the geological evidence shows that we have had a lot of periodic glaciation or ice ages, and they seem to be following in a similar pattern in so many years. And NASA did a study and found out it had to do with the elliptical orbit of the Earth around the sun, and that that our orbit actually changes. And that, and so it isn't necessary because of the tilt of the Earth. When they start talking about how, well, the ice cap is melting in one area. Yeah, but it's probably increasing in the other. All right. So you need to look at both. But NASA has found that they have discovered why we have these periodic ice ages. And so that is also evidence that, you know, changes in temperature and climate are cyclic. So how does that relate to us in politics? Is now the vast majority of the Democrats are for trying to prevent. And here's the issue. Their solution is to just literally destroy our wealth. That's why our gas prices are literally to destroy our economy in order to prevent something that is unpreventable, okay? No matter what they do. If you look at the science of that these temperature changes are cyclic, we can't prevent this, okay? In fact, really, the CO2 levels are, when you look at that last 100,000-year cycle, the one we're in right now, the relationship between the CO2 and the temperature is, okay, it's like temperature's leveled out for some reason, and the CO2 has just kept going up. So, this is something we probably can't prevent, all right? And so what I would advocate is we need to start studying what is going to happen. How does this change our weather patterns, changes our climate? Here in Virginia, it's global warming is good, okay? We don't have these, strange weather patterns. In fact, where it makes a skiing season a little bit shorter, I'm able to leave my tropical plants outside in the winter more often than before. Okay, yeah, we're getting into a different climate for growing. Okay, before we'd have a lot, we're still having some good snows, but it's warmer. It's definitely warmer, but you go out west and they're having massive droughts. Which is going to affect the climate. I mean, the production of food. Actually, this was interesting. I attended back when I was in Oklahoma, and I was very active in paleontology. I'd go down to OSU and chat with the geology and paleontology professor down there and exchange ideas. And he always had time for me. But I attended a conference on this subject, and it was interesting because the one guy who was presenting, he would point out what fossils existed in Oklahoma and would tie it to animals that exist today. And one of the things he pointed out is that the giant armadillo had migrated from South America to Oklahoma, and he said similarly, the armadillo of today has migrated into Oklahoma, and it's funny because when I moved out of the Army and I moved back to northern Oklahoma, and I think that was 1994, I saw my first armadillo. I'm like, I never saw armadillos before in that. I'm like, I asked my mother about it. She said, yeah, they've now all showed up. And then it wasn't, and they were just arriving because after a year or two, all of a sudden, northern Oklahoma looked like Texas. Dead armadillos on the road. But what this paleontologist mentioned is that after the giant armadillo arrived in Oklahoma, it didn't really advance any further because the ice age came. And I'm like, huh. So what probably allowed the armadillos to migrate was temperature, climate change. The earth was probably getting warmer, and they were, whatever they fed on, or they were moving to those areas until the temperature changed and killed them off, or moved them back. And so that was, I think, my first hint that the this whole climate change stuff is cyclic. But I love getting in debates with liberals, and I've had this debate a lot. But now most of my liberal friends have all blocked me from social media, so I rarely have them challenge me, but it's always interesting because when they're arguing with you, they will argue, you need to read the science. You need to read the science. They say science isn't agreed on this. You're assuming all scientists are agreed on this when they're not. And then I would point out the studies, the NASA study, and then now we have this one. And in fact, if you're ever debating them, now keep in mind, you know, we're going to do some work to help people running for Congress who are conservatives to develop their platforms. And part of that is to help them learn how to debate these issues, right? And because I've had this debate with so many, I mean, we're talking about debating on Facebook that goes on for a couple days. That's now anybody that, you know, I challenge, they usually just end it real quick because they know I'll outlast them. And again, I only debate when I know I'm going to win. There's a lot of issues I'm not going to debate on. I don't have a real strong position on, but global warming, I love that one. I love that one. And some of the arguments are, they'll cite these articles here. And they'll send me the links to these articles. You know, there's the proof. Here, pick something in that article. No. Just read the article. It will tell you I'm right. I said, no, I will debate anything you want to bring up. And what I find is they have accepted those articles on face value. Most of your people, you know, the people you're going to debate, they don't know the subject to debate it. They're just going to say, here, this article proves I'm right. Well, what aspect of that article proves you're right? Well, everything. So that's a common one. And again, you know, like you say, they always say, but the science says, and I've said, well, the science isn't agreed on this. It's inconclusive, trying to think of what else, other arguments, but we're working on that. But that's one I always enjoyed, climate change. So the thing is, we do not need to destroy our economy. We need my cousin has a PhD in chemistry. And after he got out, he graduated, he took a teaching position in a small town in Kansas along the border, the place where he's born, all right? And, you know, it's like, why would anyone want to go back and teach college in a small, you know, college in a podunk town? Well, that's where his family is. Well, his brother and his father have passed away, and he wrote me asking about how to get hired by the government, how to get a government job. Since I had worked in that, I'm told, oh, I can tell you all about it. Question is why? And he said, well, he didn't cite the fact like he no longer has any family ties to that town, and now he can sever his roots. He was like, well, his wife is in medical school and she's going to be going for a residency and they're moving away. And so he's thinking about going to work for the government, getting out of teaching. He enjoyed teaching, but he wants to do something else. And then we started talking about what would he really like to do? And he's really into this climate change. But it's not the church of global warming. In his case, he's saying, we have to accept this as a fact. We are not going to change this. All right. We need to learn to adapt. And he said, that's where our effort needs to be. And that's what he wants to do is get involved with politicians to help him develop. What we're hearing is on the Republican side, it's denial. And that's not an argument, okay? It's a fact. The Earth temperature is changing. You know, you just look foolish when you try to deny that. If you accept it, then we go, now we can move on. And then, of course, on the left, it's, no, we're going to kill ourselves because the Earth is going to get so hot, we're all going to die. And I'm like, don't think so. Actually, what happens is the Earth, which you find in these cycles, is everything seems to correct everything. That's why cycles change, is there's corrections, just like in the stock market. There are corrections, okay? It'll get so hot that then all of a sudden it has to cool off, right? The Church of Global Warming believes that it's just going to keep getting hotter, hotter, hotter until everybody dies. Right, and they're in a panic mode now. Well, they're not listening to the science; they're listening to the church. The church. So anyway, he brought up a lot of interesting ideas. He said, like, and this is before the current economic crisis we're in with inflation and gas, which was up to, you know, $5 a gallon. Now it's dropped down. It's still above $4 a gallon, which is still twice what it was before Biden took office. But, I mean, there was always going to be a time we're going to run out of fossil fuels, okay? And he pointed this out, that not climate crisis, it's resources. Okay, I just got a text from somebody. All right, so who's listening to the show? She said it's these are resources. Well, what he pointed out was, see, everybody's thinking of the oil and gas is needed to and all this, and by going green, by going electric cars, that eliminates that problem. No, it's the thing he pointed out. He's a chemist. We need oil to produce plastic. I mean, most of what we use in our daily lives is produced through petroleum. And he heard an interesting take. He said, what we need to do is start husbanding. You know, we do need to go green. We need to go to shift to renewable energy where we can and get off the fossil fuels because they're going to run out. And we really need to start husbanding those, you know, what petroleum we have for those things that we can't produce any other way. And I hadn't thought about that, but it's, yeah, plastic. Look at how much plastic we use in everything. Imagine there's no plastic. What would that do? You know, how would your house change? And I go, well, we definitely need to save that. And then he talked about growing, you know, because we got these droughts in the Southwest. That's where most of our food is produced, out of these gardens, down in the Arizona and the places like that, which are draining the Colorado River and I think it's the Hoover Dam, which is where they borrow all that water from. Well, that's drying up. We also get a lot of our produce from Mexico. Well, this climate change is affecting that. And what he pointed out is we don't have to grow from there. We can grow locally. And see, you can set up, there's a lot of, like, I think it's hydroponics, where literally you can grow tomatoes without soil. It's just dripping water. And in fact, I had a presentation, someone gave a presentation on different ways of growing, you know, vegetables and things. And they introduced me to that. And he talked about the tomatoes grown that way are the most delicious tomatoes he's ever eaten. And this can all be done locally. And I asked him, I said, well, you know, we're from the Midwest. What about those huge wheat and corn fields? I mean, you're talking like miles and miles of fields. And he's like, no, you could just grow that indoors too. I don't know how, but he explained it to me. If there's anybody I would consider an expert, I would say it's him. And but then So I'm like, okay, so that's a solution. All right. So then, you know, it's like we no longer have to rely on the produce coming from these drought areas. We can grow it in other areas. Now, what is really killing our economy and causing the inflation is transportation. It's not cheap anymore. When gas prices doubled, more than doubled, well, it is that gas that fuels the trucks that is delivering all our produce. And see, you know, when I grew up in the 60s, you tended to eat food according to the season. There was a season for apples. There was this, I loved the season of corn on the cob, okay? And then, you know, I come from a family that liked the canned food, okay? So after the harvest, everything was grown locally. After the harvest, then they would start preserving it. So eating, you know, fresh corn on the cob was just something you got a certain period of time. Apples too. We had apple trees and we would grow those, and then we got into canning apples. Right? So you had one season in which you got to eat fresh apples. But when, you know, that all changed when they started, you know, growing this produce in the Southwest and in Mexico, because the growing season is all year, right? And we are now comfortable with the idea that I can walk into the store, you know, any day, any season, and buy fresh apples or buy fresh tomatoes, right? Well, that may change. But what my cousin, Chad Kilbane, brought up is that even though there's a drought there, we can go back to producing those locally. And I had thought about this too, that, you know, there was going to be a day that, you know, gasoline we're going to start running out. And when we start running out, then gas prices are going to go up. And when they go up, then the cost of everything else was going to go up, unless we shifted from shipping it to producing locally. And that's what my cousin is advocating. And now we're seeing this. And so, I mean, when we grew up, most of what I ate came from local farms. The food, the produce, the vegetables, the milk. We had local dairies, right? So it was all produced locally. We've shifted away from that. Now I think we need to go back. And the benefit is that is it would create more jobs. It create jobs locally. Especially when you're looking at states which I use the term a destitute economy. It may not be the right term, but where, you know, like West Virginia, because I got a lot of good friends in West Virginia, you know, its economy was based on coal. Well, there are not that many coal jobs anymore. And there's like, and I have seen the effects of that. I mean, towns are, you know, losing their population. People are moving away, or those that are staying don't have jobs. Okay, and so I think if we follow my cousin's advice and go, hey, let's get back to producing locally. Okay, and then with the greenhouses, you know, you have thermal energy. You can drill down into the earth and heat up water, you know, because the Earth's core is hot, and they do that in Iceland. They have greenhouses that grow produce all year long, right? Because they're heated up by thermal energy, but also they're able to they have lamps that produce sunlight year round, or the equivalent of sunlight. And keep in mind, when you're in the northern part of the northern hemisphere, the winters, during the winters, the nights, days are short and the nights are very long. I remember in Germany, you know, during when we had the summer, that's what it was. I remember that. So I could walk into a bar and it was still daylight. You stay there, come out of that bar at 3 o'clock in the morning and the sun's coming up. You know, it's like going in, the sun's, you know, we still have sunlight, they come out, we have sunlight. So there are ways in which we can solve that problem, all right? And it can probably be beneficial to our local economy. It will help reduce our dependency on gasoline for shipping, okay? We're working out this plan to coach candidates on how to debate, and keep in mind, you know, I can't make you an expert. I can give you a lot of the reading materials. Hey, go read this, go look at that. But here's the issue. The people you're going to be debating aren't experts either. Rarely, except for like my cousin says, I said, rarely have I debated anybody. And that's an expert. They only know what they've read, and everything's one-sided. And it's the same thing in Congress. None of those guys are experts on that subject, okay? I'm like, hey, you know, take what I got given you, and that's enough to handle those people. All right, I just got a message. James is back, okay?
Yeah,
I just rambled for like, 30, 40 minutes on this whole climate change thing, you started it.
Well, I was listening to it. I mean, it was very interesting.
All right, so you're good. All right, hey, take it over, man.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Because I'm running out. I'm hearing you. I'm sitting there like, okay, I'm at the end of this subject, and I'm going.
I
going to talk about next?
Yeah, no, I was reading this article, you know, about where, you know, they're coming after Joe Manchin, West Virginia, and it really is about climate change. And the reality is that they hate the fossil fuel industry. Number one. The Democrats tagged the industry, the gas, coal, and oil industry with that name, fossil fuels, you know, because of, you know, it's the fossilized remains that turn into, and you know, to either coal or to oil or to gas. And the reality is that, you know, that's not what's causing climate change, you know. Now, there is an issue with pollution. There is. There is an issue with companies and power companies in other countries like China and Russia, Iran, and we can just go on and on and on, who have no regulatory compliance divisions. And you know, they burn that coal straight out the stacks, man. I mean, so there's no monitoring for, you know, sulfur dioxide. There's no monitoring for mercury. There's none of that. And, you know, as a matter of fact, when we really found out about how disastrous China was is when we had the Olympics there. And when the athletes got there, the air quality was so bad. It was so bad that it really hurt a lot of their abilities to compete, you know, because a lot of them have been, you know, used to, you know, working in different climates. So, but the climate had nothing to do with it. It had everything to do with the smog, the air pollution. And we fixed that under President Nixon. Whether people really want to admit that or not, but President Nixon is essentially the father of that. Okay. Now, obviously the movement on that started earlier. But Nixon is ultimately the one that really put those wheels into motion. So climate change, you know, it's a buzzword right now. It's something that everyone's saying, but I don't deny that we need to, you know, to have, you know, regulatory compliance. But we go way over and above, you know, the standard here. Most of the people that are in the gas and oil industry, look, they don't want to get shut down. You know, the coal mines, they don't want to get shut down. So, and they know that they have inspectors that are there or potentially could be there at any time. So, you know, in America, it's better to do it here. It's better to use it here. It's better to process it here because we have that. Now, when we mine all of our coal and we ship it to China and they're burning it, like I said, straight out the stack. You don't believe me? Go over there and check it out. That will reach, that pollution level can reach, you know, the oceans and can reach waterways and can get into the air streams and different things like that. So if people are really concerned, then they would seriously look at how we do it here compared to how they do it there and encourage, instead of, you know, praising, you know, Joe Biden for shipping off. I mean, he shipped off to a company in China that had ties to Hunter Biden. That's not a fake thing, folks. That's not a QAnon bullshit. That is real. You know, his son has ties to these companies and is going to profit from this, and sold our reserves to the Chinese. And I don't know what kind of a sweetheart deal that they got on that one. But I assure you that you can probably go to China and I don't think you're going to pay $5 or $6 a gallon for gasoline there. Of course, most of the people don't drive, but because it's a communist country, and in the communist countries, you know, which it seems like the ultra left is really trying to make America into a country that looks like Russia or looks like North Korea or looks like China. Now, a lot of them will say, well, no, not really. We're really wanting to make it look like Switzerland. Well, if that's the case, then everybody serves in the military in Switzerland. So you're going to have to shave your hair, cut your beard. You know, you're going to have to, you know, if you really want to be like Switzerland, then you're going to have to operate in that fashion. There's a big difference between the Swiss form of socialism, you know, and the Russian model or the Chinese model. And trust me, the Russian and the Chinese model, you know, the way that they took over is exactly like you saw the actions of BLM and some of these socialist and communist groups when they were burning down the cities out west and all across America. That's Red October. Rich, you can talk about Red October. I mean, did the Russians, when the Communist Party killed the Tsar and his whole family, was that a pleasant takeover of everybody holding their hand and singing Kumbaya?
Yeah, but that's not a that's not some. Well, actually, I was going to say, no, we're getting to that point. We're getting to open rebellion and armed resistance. I mean, we saw that with January the 6th from the extreme right, and mm-hmm. we saw that the summer before with the BLM riots. Okay. No, the thing that concerns me, you know, which is, since you're bringing up this subject, is, you know, and it's not just rhetoric, but you look at dictatorships. The first two things they have to do is first suppress freedom of speech, if there ever was freedom of speech to begin with. Russia really didn't have – actually, what's funny is Russia really didn't come out of the serfdom period until, like, 1870. And I think it was Tsar Alexander who did that, and then it killed him. Okay.
Yeah.
It was too progressive. They ended up killing him. Thanks, mm-hmm. right? That's it. That's the gratitude he got. But then the thing is, suppressing the freedom of speech. And then now many of the countries probably did, you know, when they keep talking about gun control and stuff like that, not all of them. I mean, they all, like Germany, they always regulated guns, as far as I know. It's mostly for hunting, and there's a whole, and it doesn't change much. It's just, it's a very lengthy process you have to go through in training to be able to hunt, and you have to join these hunting clubs. But you hear about the Austrians, you know, when they invited Hitler in to fix their economy, they owned guns and he took those away. Okay. And we find the same thing here. All right. Is why are they so bent on taking away the guns? And when the evidence shows that, we're not talking banning guns. We're talking about confiscation, like Australia or England,
absolutely,
where they're not allowed to own them, has not affected the murder rate. Everybody says, it reduces the number of murders by gun. Well, of course, but does it reduce the murder rate? All the studies show, no, it doesn't. In fact, there are crimes that do increase. Rape, burglaries, okay? Those increase with the when you take away the guns, right? But I was, the freedom of speech thing, and it's interesting how it's happened in such a subtle way. We didn't know, and it was actually the English, the Brits, who when they observed the 2016 election, that they saw what was going on. That in the name of political correctness, we were being silenced, you know, and we heard of safe spaces and things like that. And all of a sudden we realized that, well, safe spaces, basically it's the two sides, left and the right, conservatives and liberals are not talking to each other. There's no longer a dialogue. I'm going to block you on social media so I don't have to listen to your ideas because they offend me. And that's really, I think, what you wanted to talk about tonight is, you know, I have this idea that doesn't match with science or whatever, but I want to hear your idea because you're counter to it because it offends me. And if you offend me, then I have a label for you. You know, there was
racist.
Tell you how many times I was called a racist. I got, you know, and I finally, like, my Panamanian, my Hispanic wife might take offense to that, but and all my, you know, minority friends, I said, but
kids,
I realized that the definition of a racist had changed because it was used so much. It was racist was anybody who's winning an argument with a liberal. Okay. Oh, and I got down a shift to something because you started talking about the Democrats. Have you read, you know, the latest studies showing that the Democratic Party is no longer the party of the working class and the minorities? He said, right now, he said, when it comes to Hispanics, the Hispanics are pretty much split, you know, between the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. You know, they're shifting. The Democrats have been losing. They have been losing blacks, all right, especially with the last election, and definitely the Asians, okay? And what the Democratic Party, and the working class, because you look at what's going on, it's, you know, Biden's created this inflation. He's costing jobs. Obama, same thing. You know, manufacturing is not coming back. And it's the Republicans are trying to create jobs. So the working class people are shifting to the Republican Party. And what the Democratic Party, this is what the latest studies that I've been reading on hearing it on the news, even CNN mentioned it. But when you read it, it says the Democratic Party is becoming the party of elitists. That's what we used to think the Republican Party was the party of big money. And actually, someone before this recent study came out, there had been another study about how the Democratic Party was changing, and it was because you needed money to get elected.
Right.
Needed lots of money. And so, you know, they were shifting away from getting money from the people to getting money from big donors like George Soros. Okay. And all of a sudden, they were raising money the same way the Republican Party was raising money. And when you get money from big donors, they don't just give it away. They have an agenda, okay, and you have to subscribe to that agenda. And so the Democratic Party is becoming identical to the Republican Party, and it's now shifting that the Republican Party is now, you know, with the populist movement, that they'll becoming the party of the working class, and the Democrats, that all of them would argue with, you know, they were referring to everybody that voted for Trump as uneducated, the poor,
yeah,
the rural. And I'm going, you know, I said, well, you know, I kind of take offense with that because I have a master's degree. What, you know, what degree do you have? Okay. And none of them would reply. They had advanced degree. Because if they did, I said, then how many books have you written too? All right. And you know what? You know, I'm not alone because most of my friends who are Army officers or were, they all have advanced degrees too. So that argument doesn't hold water. So, but yeah, it's becoming the party of elitists.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And you can look it up, people. You read about it. The Democratic Party study has now just been released that the Democratic Party is not the party of the minorities or the working class people anymore. They're shifting to the Republicans.
Yeah, well, you know, as you look at this whole thing, you know, we have many areas here that we're looking at. Now, you know, the shift away from natural gas, oil, and coal, that's a big deal for me because, you know, that is a national security issue that, you know, anytime that your economy becomes tanked, you know, it becomes a serious national security issue for many reasons, as we can go into. Everything from espionage becomes easier because people are easier manipulated by money or the lure of money. People are less likely to work, less likely to be engaged to do the things that we need done to run our country. Our infrastructure is, you know, in a pretty sad state of affairs. But all of this, when I watch, especially here in the last 7 months, 8 months, the things just seem to be intentionally destructive. And I'm going to get into a few subjects here that's going to upset some people, but we're going to go there because it's just got to be said. You know, we are expected to accept lifestyles and personal choices, you know, that people make. I don't have a problem accepting someone's personal lifestyle. Who you want to love, whether you want to be a man, a woman, whatever the case may be. But I do have a problem with trying to have people make me believe that that is normal, that it's supposed to be a normal accepted thing in my life, and that my kids need to learn about it in school. My answer to that is no, not only no, but hell no. You know, just like I don't want my kids taught, you know, some of this radicalized nonsense from either side. So it's either the left or the right. You know, we see this movement in society that not only rich, not only is it trying to destroy our energy industry and our economy, but it's also trying to destroy our morality in America. And whether people like what I have to say or not, the truth is some things are just wrong in my book. Now, it might be right in your book, and it's okay for you to live the way you want to live. That on me, because I'm not forcing my religious beliefs on you. And there's a meme out there, you know, that essentially has a picture of a guy walking by and somebody sneezes and it happens to be two people, you know, at a pride event. The one guy sneezes, and the guy looks at him and says, "God bless you." Well, the other part of that meme is they're holding up signs and screaming in his face, "How dare you try to push your religious freedoms on us?" At the same time that they're saying, "You have to accept us. You have to believe what we believe. You know, you have to accept this as normal." You know, when in fact they represent a very, very small group of Americans. And the thing that triggered this was today, you know, whenever you open up the news and you see that the Biden administration, let me pull this up because I don't want to give you something that's wrong. But the Biden administration sent two government officials to represent the entire United States of America. I don't give a damn what anybody says. When you send somebody to be an ambassador, they are the representation of the entire country. And in this news report, you look and you see that they sent Ambassador to Ambassador Philippe Etienne's residence for Bastille Day, the National Day of France. And the two that they sent, and I want to make sure I read this right because I don't want to have anybody offended by me saying their name wrong, but was the first female four-star admiral of the U.S. Public Health Service and U.S. Assistant Secretary for Health, Rachel Levine, or the artist formerly known as Richard Leland Levine. And you know, it is just unbelievable that we look at this and we think that we're supposed to be accepting this, you know what I mean? And I don't have a problem with them doing, saying, living any way that they want to live, but I do have a problem with trying to force it on us, or worst case, sending this to be the representation of the American people, because it's a false representation of the American people. This is not who most Americans are. And Rich, I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
No, as I told you before, they're not representing the American people. They're representing the Biden administration. That's the way I see it. I think that's the way.
Rest of the world sees it, Rich.
Well,
the rest of the world sees it.
I'm going to get to that. Hold on. I'm going to get to that. I'm saying Biden didn't send them there to represent, that this is what Americans are. No, this is his administration. Except for the three most important people, you know, your Secretary of Defense, your Secretary of State, and the National Security Advisor. Those were picked based on their professional experience, their experience at those jobs, because that's the problem we're having now. We've got a world. We've got, you know, Russia in Ukraine, and he picked, but everybody else was picked based on diversity, and none of them were qualified for the jobs that they had. And Buttigieg. I mean, I like Buttigieg. I like him. I mean, you know, he served in the military. He's a mayor. And he run against he's a good politician.
Yes,
but he's not the guy to be in charge of transportation. What does he know about it? What does he
Nothing.
Know about it? And
Nothing.
What is the problem we have? Transportation. We have a supply chain breakdown. Not his fault.
No.
It's not his fault. But he's
now, wait
not
a
qualified
why
to
is it
fix
not
it.
His, why is it not his
wait,
fault?
Because there's a lot of factors, okay? The COVID thing, it goes all the way to China.
Yeah, but my question is, when you're put in command, when you're put in charge of something, it is his fault. He accepted it for what it was.
No, it's his responsibility. There's a difference. It's his responsibility. Tell me what he did to cause this to happen. Tell me what he did to cause the backlog in the ports in California, in Los Angeles. What did he do? If he did something, that's his fault. What did he do to cause the gas prices to go up?
Now,
he didn't do anything.
He supports Biden.
Biden's fault.
He supported the policies of this administration that makes him guilty, just as guilty as everybody else.
All right. Who did you vote for Biden?
No, sir, I did not. I did not vote for Donald Trump the second time. I did the first time.
Right. Who did you vote that?
I voted for the independent candidate. That's exactly what
I
voted.
So then you contributed to Biden's victory, because any vote not for Donald Trump was a vote for Biden, and therefore you're at fault.
Not true.
By the logic you're using,
I'm not a member of the Democrat Party that received an appointment because I kissed the ring.
Well, anyway, I'm busting on you. What I'm trying to tell you is,
I know
I disagree with you on that. I disagree. I'm like, because I try to give a lot of these people the benefit of the doubt. Remember, I tried to defend the cops in Uvalde, and come to find out, no, they really were cowards. Okay, seriously,
terrible
cowards. Okay,
every damn one of them.
Oh God, then even more. Now we have video of them standing around with all the tools they needed to go in there. They're standing around like they're on a damn lunch break. Okay. And there's a guy in there killing kids. Okay, that's bad. Okay, so, but I'm going to give Buttigieg the benefit of the doubt. He didn't cause this, but he's responsible for fixing it, and he doesn't have the skill set to do that. Okay, now see, an Army officer, here's the thing. You take an Army officer. We're trained to be managers and leaders. There's a difference, okay? You take a logistician, an Army logistician, until you're in a battalion command above, you'll hold that job for 2 years. But every other job, you're going to change jobs every year, okay? And it takes about 3 months before you really know what's going on, and then 6 months. This is what I remember when I was lieutenant. 6 months before everything starts moving the way you want it to move. Okay, so basically, the Army trains inefficiency. What I mean by that is, we don't produce anything. We never produce anything. So what we're doing is we're maintaining a certain level of inefficiency because we move everybody around. But what we're doing is we're training leaders and managers that we can throw them into any situation. They walk in there and they have the skill set to look around and going, I know how to fix it. I don't know crap about this. I don't know anything about this subject. But I walk in there and I'm like, I know how to identify the people who are smart, and you know, and I know how to organize and fix that. I think Buttigieg was a captain. I don't think he was higher than that. So, you know, he has limited management experience but I think was in the reserves too. So,
I think he was Navy Reserve or something like that.
Yeah, Naval Reserve. Yeah. So we can train some people to be able to walk into any situation and figure, but when you get into logistics, now logistics is different animal altogether. And you take an infantryman, a combat arms officer, and you throw him into a logistics assignment, he's going to struggle because it's a different mindset. But once you understand, you know, logistics, and you look at our logisticians, I mean, every 3 years we're sending these guys back to school to learn to manage logistics at different levels, all right? But they have a mindset, and that's why we do logistics right. That's why, you know, we can deploy around the world to a place like Kuwait, and then, you know, we can launch an offensive, you know, 500 miles from our supply base and take down the capital in less than a month. I think it was like a couple weeks, okay? Yet Russia can't drive 100 miles to the capital of Ukraine and take it down. Okay, so yeah, we do logistics right. So anyway, I differ with you. I believe it's not his fault. Some of it is Biden's fault, especially the fuel prices. Buttigieg, when I listen to him talk, I feel sorry for him. When they press him, they hit him with the hard questions. He's trying to put the best face on it. And he's probably trying to do the best he can, but I'm not hearing anything out of him that gives me any confidence he knows what he's doing. Okay.
Yeah.
Back to the two representatives of our nation. They represent the Biden administration, but the world is full of a lot of bad actors. And I'm not talking in the film industry. I'm talking about leaders that are bullies. Okay. If you really want to think about, you know, world leaders is a bully. He's picking on a neighbor. That's bullying. Okay. And he thinks he has the right to do this. This is the kind of people we have out there in the world. And they're leaders of powerful nations. You know, Xi in China, Putin in Russia, and then, you know, you've got all these other, you know, smaller countries. Mm-hmm. And so when you have an administration that is built on diversity, that's great for the Europeans. They, you know, they're probably embracing, you know, this kind of diversity themselves. But it sends a message to the bad actors out there that you are weak. That's my impression. So when you ask me that, I'm like, plus he sent it to France. I mean, seriously, Schwarzkopf, what did he say about, going to war without the French is like going hunting without an accordion. Okay. Yeah, I think the two cabinet members he sent there to the Bastille Day, perfect. Perfect for France, perfect for Biden, okay? I'd love to hear what the French have to say about it.
Well, okay. You know, it's not just that. It's just it's a misrepresentation. And, you know, I'm watching the military really struggle right now.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I watched the TikTok video of the sergeant on active duty who just got promoted, you know, in uniform bitching about, you know, the repeal of Roe versus Wade, you know, and it's like, let me tell you, when you put on that uniform, you need to learn to shut your mouth, okay, because you take an oath to support and defend. You don't take an oath. You lose some of your constitutional freedoms in order to protect others. That's just the
fact. All right,
fact.
Let me clarify what you're saying. Okay, we take an oath to defend the Constitution, not the country, not the president, but to obey the lawful orders of those above us. That is where that's why we cannot openly criticize the president of the United States, because he's in our chain of command. Okay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can sit there and you may not agree with the Supreme Court ruling, but here's the thing. That's a constitutional ruling.
Yeah.
And you took an oath to defend that. Okay. Yeah. You may not like it, but you've actually taken an oath to defend that. Okay. So if you start criticizing the Supreme Court.
It wasn't just a criticizing the Supreme Court. It was the, I don't know that I can do this shit, is what she said. I don't know that I can continue serving.
Oh, well, then that's an honest admission. He needs to get out.
Yeah,
he needs to get out.
You need to be in front of the commander.
Can, yeah. Right.
You
no,
need to
I
receive.
Don't, I don't have a problem with that. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
yeah,
you know,
okay.
And that's the kind of things. And then, you know, we watched the video of the, you know, and look, I'm not picking on the women. I'm not picking on the females. Mm-hmm. But then you saw the other one of, you know, the black female who went off on everybody, just started cussing them, F you, screaming F you in the face of the first sergeant. Well, in my time, in your time,
yeah,
Rick, they would have beat your ass for doing that. They would have.
Let me.
Rick,
all right. My brother.
They would have beat your ass for doing that.
Actually, know what? I'm gonna tell you right now, James. During my Army, they would have beat, if the first sergeant would have laid a hand on a female, he'd have been relieved.
Well,
in fact, if a female even accused him of touching her inappropriately, you know, or yelling at him, would have been relieved.
That's terrible.
Before the investigation. Okay.
Yeah, I'm glad I was combat arms. I'm glad I didn't have to deal with that shit.
Yeah, all right. But I will tell you this. Now, I was going to point out, yes, there was Wall Walker counseling. Yes, there was. There was a lot of soldiers got their asses handed to them by their NCO. But here's my brother. My brother was a Marine, and he was Old Corps. He made it all the way to Gunnery Sergeant, which is probably one of the most, you know, that is the rank that, the, you know, like being a first sergeant in the Army is a prestigious rank. Being the Gunnery Sergeant in the Marine Corps is a prestigious rank. He beat up soldiers. He beat up Marines. He wouldn't hesitate. They lift off at him, boom, he'd beat them up. And he would get charges brought on him, which was slowing down his promotion. But we were talking one time, and he said the most important lesson he ever received was when he was made a corporal, was the old NCOs. And he said, you're Old Corps. He said, you're an old – he said, you function like an Old Corps NCO. He said, here's the most important thing you've got to learn. Because my brother understood the importance of tough love, because, you know, it was my uncle whooping his ass that kept him in school, okay, and straightened him out. So he understood the importance of tough love, okay? But this guy said, you have to decide who is worth risking your rank over. You're not going to beat up everybody that insults you. So if I were a company commander and she went off on me, and I'm standing there like, well, your Army career is about over, okay, if you're not going to jail, okay? I'll sit there and like, okay, go ahead, do it, finish your rant, and first sergeant, go ahead and fill out the paperwork. We're sending, you know, we had the retraining brigades back then, but it's like that's
yeah, I remember that.
You know,
the commander,
yeah,
commander's correctional force,
yeah,
the CCF. You
so there's a lot of options.
But why would people want a hero, you know, put these people in a heroes? They're not heroes for
doing
that.
Wait, who are we talking about? The woman that went off on her first
sergeant? Both of them. I mean, both of them. I don't know what she's going off.
Wait, who said they're heroes? No. Who?
Oh,
you didn't
man.
Bring, oh, you brought it up as an example. What?
No, I'm telling you, man, there's so many people defending that. And we see these veterans.
Oh, are they in the military, though? Are those people in the military?
Yes.
Okay.
And you see these veterans groups, these really hard progressive veterans groups are saying,
mm-hmm,
well, you know, somebody probably triggered her. Well, so here's the deal. Here's what I'll say, all of you people. If you get triggered, mm-hmm, don't join the military, because you may be setting out on a screen line one night, and somebody might get on a bullhorn on the other side, because they do that from time to time, and may talk bad about you. You know, now you're going to get triggered and get up and start yelling and screaming and showing your ass. You're going to get killed. You're going to get everybody else killed. You know, there's got to be a time and a place. And the thing, when I see stuff like that, I see a lack of self-control. I see a lack of self-control, a lack of professionalism, and a lack of maturity, and they need to kick their asses out. Need to kick them out.
Yep.
So, yep. I mean,
no,
I do it. I mean, as a company commander.
Yeah, see, I never had to get upset as a company commander because all I had to do was sign my name to the paperwork, and you're either going to jail or you're going to you're going out of the Army. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't have to get upset. I mean, I had that authority. Okay. I knew the regulations. I've put a lot of people out of the Army. I've taken a lot of rank. But on the reverse, I've promoted a lot of people. I took good care of. So it was an interesting someone told me this one time, and they said, you can tell a good unit when you have a high number of awards given and a high number of punishments, you know, Article 15s, you know, court martial stuff like. And I'm like, what? That's what you mean. I'm like, they're like, you know, you're like busting everybody or you're promoting everybody. And he goes, it means the chain of command is paying attention. And I'm like,
yeah.
No, it's not one-sided. It's all rewards or it's all negative punishment. It's balanced because the chain of command is paying attention. So when I talk about I busted a lot of people, no, I had no problem getting rid of it. As a platoon leader, I had to write that 90-day letter, relief of cause for one of my squad leaders because I asked, you know, when I asked myself, am I willing to take this man into combat? Will he get my soldiers killed? And the answer was, yes, he will. So I had to get rid of him, right? But before I, that guy, I got pulled over and sent to another platoon. They thought the problem was the platoon sergeant, and that was worse. That problem was worse. I found out it wasn't the platoon sergeant, and him and I, we hit it off. I enjoyed working with him. We became good friends, and I had that job for 18 months. I was a support platoon leader. I figured out what the problem was, but I took a lot of rank, you know, because those guys, those truck drivers had a lot of bad habits. But, man, no sooner than, you know, it wasn't vindictive about it. But like, you screw up here. You know, we can take in your rank. We told you what the rules are. But as soon as you, you know, straighten out, I'm going to fight to get you that rank back, okay?
Yeah.
If anything, I want to get, you know, I got to get you promoted so I can take that rank away from you next time you screw up. You know,
yeah.
It's funny. And the guys understood it. They knew the rules. I remember they popped smoke in the barracks because we hauled ammunition, and someone had smoke grenade decided to pop it in the barracks. You know how that stuff smells? Can't get it out.
Oh yeah, I know. Yeah, I know.
I came in, you know, being the platoon sergeant came in, lined them all up on the hallway. All right, whoever pops smoke, forward, and the two guys step forward, and I'm like, first of all, I was impressed with their honesty. I'm like, you guys know what I'm going to do to you, right? Yes, sir. I'm taking everything away from you, which is what I did. It was all Mac. I'm like, you know, yes, sir. I said, you know that. Why'd you do it? They're like, well, sir, at the time, it seemed like a good idea. I'm like, but I admired him. I admired. They said their attitude is, yeah, we fucked up. Let's go ahead and get it over, get our punishment over with, okay? Because they knew as soon as their punishment is done, I'm gonna start fighting for it. Get their rank back as soon as they're eligible. Yeah, it was funny. That was a fun platoon to have.
But you know the
anyway.
The thing is we're down to our last 24 minutes, and I just want to say that you know, there's just got to be a return to some dang normalcy and stability in America. I mean, I don't know what has happened, but you know, it's like it's just went
haywire.
No,
I'll tell you, I can tell you. Well, it started with Disney Channel. You know, kids grew up watching TV shows that showed them that parents are idiots, okay? And the education system has broken down, and, you know, there's a lack of discipline in that. So, for example, we hire I'm getting a lot of garbling on it. We hired a recent college grad to work on our STEM program. And when I went over to meet with him, a retired sergeant major who's working in our foundation, she pulls me off to the side and says, "I need to fire this guy. You know, he's insubordinate and stuff like that." So you got a radio going, playing? Because I'm hearing a lot of background noise. Okay.
No.
So anyway, so I've met with this guy and stuff like that. In fact, we had a Zoom meeting the other day with and the head of our little committee is retired General Harper, really great guy. And, prefer, you know, we all want to call him Sir, but he prefers to be called Gil. And before the meeting, because he knew I met with this young man to work out this, you know, we're working on this STEM program. And he wanted to hear my opinion because he had two retired sergeant majors saying, "We need to fire this guy." And I said, "No, he's not it. He's typical of his generation. They don't show respect. They see the new generation believes they can walk up to a CEO and just treat him like a normal person. Like, hey, you're not any better than me. Okay, you're just like me." And like, no, see, we grew up knowing that you had to respect your elders, right? But you're saying, okay, so what is, I mean, just because they're not showing respect. See, he's a good worker, and that's what I told Gil. I said, no, the guy's getting the job done. He's doing everything. He's not only doing what we're asking, he's doing more. And I was going, yeah, he's not showing respect, but he's not disrespectful. But I find that even when I was teaching. And I'll give you an example. That in the senior class, if you're a listening audience out there, there's a shortage of substitute teachers, and Father Michael's wife is the principal of this Christian school, and their history teacher had blood clots near his heart, and I had to fill in his class for 2 months. Great kids, hard work. But there was in the senior class. There was one young lady who wants to be a writer. And I'm like, I'm a professional writer. I mean, I'm a published writer. So I sit there and I'm like, okay, here's something I'm going to do because I can assign writing projects. I said, I want everybody to, here's a project. I'm going to have you need to write this. It's like a page, whatever. And I will grade it. But to teach you the importance of rewriting. Good writing is rewriting. But I will give you a grade. And if you want to improve that grade, I'm going to write all kinds of things you need to improve on this, and you rewrite it. And
right.
You're great. And there's some of them took advantage of it. Well,
okay.
But this one woman, this one young lady who wanted to be a writer, considered herself a good writer.
Right.
I gave her a grade that offended her. And she, uh-huh. I mean, she came back, and I encourage people to defend their, you know, like, I allow people to argue their grades, and I enjoy that. And I will probably, if you can argue this point well enough, I will give you grades. But anyway, she come up there like, okay. But her argument was, you were being unfair and stuff like that. So I said, okay, I'll give you this much, but I'm not going to give you more than that. Right. And she's a little upset. And I, so I took what she wrote. I said, look, the sentences you have written are grammatically correct. The problem is the way when you put them together in a paragraph, this doesn't flow. Okay. And I'm sitting here and I'm writing all over this page trying to explain this. Uh-huh. And finally I realized she's not going to get it. So I completely rewrote the paragraph, and it was poetry. So I sit there, and I handed it back to her. You know, I regraded it like that, and I handed it back with all the notes. And then I handed this paragraph. I said, I can teach you how to write like this. And it was clear. I mean, the way I took the same thing she said and just rewrote it, and it just flowed like poetry. And I mean, I, you know, sometimes it comes to me, sometimes it doesn't, but this time it did. Do you think she ever came back to me about, like, I'm a published writer. You want to learn to write? I can teach you to write. Like, do you think she would
probably
come back
not.
To me?
Did she?
No.
Well, did she?
No.
Yeah.
No, they
yeah.
don't. Right? Because they think they already know it. They think, you know, it's a generation that believes they deserve everything because they want it, because they were told they're special. Yeah.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know,
yeah,
we,
you're special,
we talk about,
all right.
let's get into competition. There's no, you know, losers. Everybody's a winner, so everybody gets a trophy, okay?
Yeah.
I'm like, but then you listen to champion athletes who are saying, no, it's that process of losing that motivated me to work harder. So, no, we did this. It goes from what they saw on TV. You know, they don't look to elders as with respect. And because of that lack of respect, there's like nothing they think they can learn from them.
Yeah.
They think they already know it. Okay.
Yeah. Well, and that's the problem with, you know, what, that's why that we have a generation of pansies. I'm just going to just tell you, it's just, you know, it's changed so much that it's not even, you know, it's not even recognizable, you know, to generations that go back two or three generations. And, you know, I have a radio show that I did earlier today, and you should listen to that. It was a letter from Herschel Woody Williams, and it was essentially, it was an appeal to America. You know, he wrote this letter to me, and it was just a beautiful letter, and it was, just, you know, it's very personal. But also, there were very specific things that he said, you know, we have to address these things, Jim. He said, you know, I'm coming to the end of the leg on this race of life, but you're going to be around after that to be able to see these things through. And he said, and if you don't, hand what you didn't do to the next guy to make sure that it gets done. And you look at this and you listen to some of the things, you know, talking about the United States of America. And then if you just read his story about the hardships, I mean, look, man, it was, you know, it was tough to be born in 1923 in America. You know, it was tough, and it was tough to be born in a small town in West Virginia. And he was so small when he was born, Rich. I don't know if you know this, but his baby bed was literally a big shoebox. No joke.
Yeah.
He slept in a shoebox. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, so he must have not been very big at all, you know, when he was born. And then as he grew, he tried to join the Marines in 1942, right after the bombing of Pearl Harbor. And they wouldn't let him join. He was 5'6". He was too short to join the Marine Corps. So he waited, and they changed it in 1943. He was allowed to join, and he did. And that whole experience, not just the wartime experience, but life during the Depression, you know, this new era of people, and especially the ones that are pushing us into this next depression, which I believe will be worse because we have a society of people that are not used to even going without their air conditioner working.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't grow up in houses like we did, Rich, that had no damn air conditioning.
Yeah.
I grew up for a long time, didn't have that. Didn't have air conditioning. Your heat, you know, you might have had either gas heat or you had a coal stove, and that's just the way that it was. And everybody else had it that way. Or you had the big oil tank outside, and you had the big regulators, you know, the registers mm-hmm. in your house. If you touched them, you got your ass burned. And you learned real quick, you know, to not do stupid things because you could really get hurt. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. We have to put a guard on everything. You know, we had fireplaces with sharp edges and everything else. And I remember as a kid, you know, constantly, you know, getting hurt or bumping into something. But I can remember my father and my grandfather saying, did that hurt? Yeah, it hurt real bad. Well, I bet you won't do that again. You know, in this society, we have, you know, you have a protective netting and a bubble around these people. They're not allowed to get hurt. They're not allowed to do things because people are scared. And then, of course, children growing up these days, as you know, is a dangerous time for kids. The freaks that have multiplied in the last 3 or 4 years is unbelievable. This child trafficking, child sexual assault, all of this shit that goes on in America, you know, and around the world. Kids are getting, you know, kidnapped and put into foreign sex trafficking operations, and in some cases they're keeping in places like Cleveland, Ohio. Just rescued 40 kids. How in the hell did somebody not see that or not say something about that? You know, these are kids 11, 12, 13 years old, boys and girls, forced to be prostitutes. You know what I mean? And my other question is when we go to punish these freaks, most of them have a deviant background. They have a problem, a mental problem, you know, or I call it a morality problem. And they basically, they think everything is okay, you know, and these are the kind of guys that would march in a damn parade butt naked. You know what I mean? We saw some of that shit during the Pride Month, you know, grown men in a parade in front of kids naked. I don't care where the hell you go in the world. That is wrong. Nobody wants to see your naked 50-some-old-year-old ass walking down.
Wait. James, you know? James, hold it. Joe, hold it. Who's taking their kids to those parades?
But their parents, and they're bad as they are. You know what I mean?
Then I was going to say, then the parents want their kids to see a grown naked man walking down
the
street.
But here's the deal, though, Rich. It's going down public streets in America. And let's just say that maybe some of these kids really are not, have no parental supervision. But the point that I'm making is it's not acceptable behavior. Under any circumstance, if you want to go and rent a building and y'all want to be inside where nobody's at and the public can't see you, helicopters can't fly over and photograph you, then by all means, y'all run around naked, do whatever you want to do in your own private area. But if you're walking down through the city streets of New York, some other area, and on both sides of the street are apartment buildings with windows. Are we supposed to block up all the windows? Once again, catering and pandering to a small group of freaking perverts that are out there doing something stupid like this. I just, look, man, I'm fed up with that. I really am. I can't stand it. I don't give a shit if they come after me and attack me for saying this. I'm telling you right now. It's unacceptable. It's unacceptable. It's perverted. And if kids are seeing it, you are a pedophile. You are a pedophile. You should be arrested for that.
No, that's not the definition of pedophilia. That's the definition of perversion.
Well, whatever.
I think that's a term you want to use. You're a pervert.
You're a pervert. Yeah, you're a pervert. But either way, you're doing something that's unacceptable in the public. I mean, whatever happened to modesty and, you know, look, the First Amendment, your First Amendment rights stop where mine begin. Okay, so if I can't go outside and walk my dog, or I can't take my kids to walk down the street because you've got the streets blocked off so you all can march up and down the streets naked, okay, I don't care about the, you know, the parades with the floats and all this other stuff, you know, the rainbow flags. That doesn't bother me. But when you are naked and you are out there carrying on like that, that's ridiculous, man. It's just unacceptable. It's unacceptable. It really is. So, I don't know. I'm frustrated about it. And I'm frustrated because we've got a group of politicians that's trying to tell the American people that this is normal, this is okay. And then they wonder why we see a marked increase in child sex trafficking. They wonder why we see a marked increase in violence on the streets and attacks and rapes and all of this other stuff that goes on that's driven by a society that has no freaking morals. You know, the moral compass in some of these folks, I don't even think they ever had one. You know?
No, we've had that discussion. No, everybody has a moral compass, but it's not, there is no common ground on that, because your moral compass today is whatever you feel is right. Right?
Yeah. But, well, whatever.
Putin believes he's morally right in what he's doing in Ukraine. Okay?
Yeah.
He's trying to restore the Russian Empire. Okay? He's trying to make, you know, Russia a better place. He believes he's morally right. And all, you know, you look at Stalin, you look at Pol Pot, you look at Mao, you know, people who killed their own population in the thousands believed they were morally right in what they did.
Well, and they didn't just do that. They did a lot worse than that. They enslaved people. They, you know, their people sexually assaulted people. You know, when the Russians go in, you know, it's a normal thing. And it's acceptable to them to go in. It's not acceptable to us. You know, we should put them in front of a firing squad when you catch them after they do such things. I mean, the reality is that now some people, you know, disagree with this, but I do believe that there should be a death penalty for those that sexually assault children. I'm just telling you. There, either that or some sort of a forced castration or something, because there's just got to be a better way of dealing with these people and sending the message that it's not going to be tolerated. It's not going to be accepted. It's not normal for a grown man to want to be naked in front of, you know, 5-year-old to 10-year-old kids. It's not normal for a grown woman to be naked in front of a bunch of little kids. You know, it's terrible. It's outrageous, and it pisses me off, and it should piss off every American that has any kind of morals, you know, or love this country. I mean, it's just, you know, we got bigger problems than just people spitting on the flag, burning the flag now. I mean, it's moved into just all-out lunacy, you know, all across this country. And, you know, I've sat quiet, and I've tried, I really, you know, Rich, for the last 4 or 5 years, I have tried very hard to be understanding, to try to, is there a way to mend fences? Well, I've come to the realization that, you know, the answer to that is that there are some people, you know, I'm going to take a quote from a famous movie, you know, Cool Hand Luke. There's some people that you just can't reach, and those people you just can't reach, buddy. So, did I lose you?
Nope. I'm just sitting here listening to you.
Yeah. See? So, you remember that movie, Cool Hand Luke, man? What a great movie that was.
Yep.
You know? And you think about all those great actors and stuff, and they're all gone now, you know. Think about the actors like John Wayne, you know, even though he wasn't a veteran, and there's some questions about that. But you know,
right.
he was a good American, man. He loved America. Yep. Ronald Reagan loved America. And some people hate his guts, you know. You can't understand how – with what you've got now, what you've had over the last, you know, 8 years, you could hate a man like Ronald Reagan. Let me tell you something. I would love to have George W. Bush back in office. To me, I think the man was a great president and a wonderful human being. You know, Jimmy Carter was a bad president, but he was a great humanitarian and still is to this day. He was a terrible president, but he was a great and is a great humanitarian who holds a level of respect, even though, you know, he didn't do so hot as president. And I don't think he denies that either. But it's just, it's unfathomable to me, unconscionable. It's just crazy that we're watching society slip into this Sodom and Gomorrah type existence, and everybody's saying it's okay. not okay. It's not okay. In my eyes, it's not okay. You do what you want to do, but you do it on your own time, in your own bedroom. Just keep it out of my face. I'm kind of a libertarian when it comes to that stuff. You know, do your own thing. Stay out of our business. Final parting thoughts there, Rich? We've got about 3 minutes left, man.
No, you've done pretty good on that. Well, if we got 3 minutes, I mean, just to remind the listening audience out there that my latest book is out in print. They Were the Rough Riders. And what makes it different from all the other books written about the Rough Riders is I had a wealth of letters, diaries, and memoirs from the men serving in the same company or troop. And this is written from the perspective of the soldiers. None of the other books had that. And I've had this discussion with a number of other people about in military history, you can – those who've worn the uniform, those who've been in combat, they have a feel for the subject that non-veterans don't. And you can tell it in the writing. And, yeah, this book is definitely written by someone who understands that soldier's experience. So you find it on Amazon. You can type in They Were the Rough Riders. You type in my last name, Kilblaine, K-I-L-L-B-L-A-N-E, and Rough Riders, and it will pull it up.
All right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I will just say this, that you are a gifted writer, and I would encourage anyone that can get out there and buy one of Rich's books or Father Michael Pacella's books as well. You will be blessed with having it, and you will learn a great deal. There's no doubt that we have a time in America now where history must be told. In the letter from Woody, and I'll say this real quick before we get off, one of the things that he did mention was that America has come to this point to where nobody wants to hear about history. And he encouraged me in this message, and it was a beautiful letter. And I'm going to get permission from his family, but I'd like to post it in the newspaper, because the advice that he gave me could be used by every American out there that says, tell your story. You know, talk about history. There's ugly parts of history, bad things that happened in the past. But when you shut it down and you refuse to talk about it, you're opening up the doorway for it to be repeated again. You know, everybody says that. Don't know history, you're doomed to repeat it. Well, that's a true statement. And I believe that we need to get together, America, and we need to figure out a better way. Thanks for listening to us tonight on Continue Mission. Hope we didn't offend anybody, but if we did, then go take a look in the mirror. You know what I mean? Because we're not the problem here. You know, what we're trying to do is just point out some real hard, cold facts. And sometimes, you know, that's the way that it is. But God bless you and God bless America, and have a great weekend. Good night, everybody.